Welcome to the Women's Bible Study Podcast, a ministry of Sheridan House. If you've missed any part of this series, you can find it and many others online at SheridanHouse.org. We hope you enjoy today's lesson.
Well, we have been studying through the treasure of right relationships. And last week we studied the treasure of right relationship within the marriage. Today, we're going to study right relationships too, and we're going to be talking, as I prayed, about relationship with children and what that looks like. And then next week, the final treasure of right relationships, number three, will be as far as work, the work situation, employer, employee, whatever your work situation is, and we're going to be taking a look at that to see what God's instructions are on how we conduct ourselves in the workplace. But today we're going to begin again with right relationships too. We're going to be talking about the family and what that looks like. And as I pray, every single one of us have children of some vein or another. Some of us have grandchildren. Some have nieces and nephews. Some have the children's ministry at church. Some of us have neighborhood children that we see running around and riding their motorcycles. I hope not. Bicycles. And all of those things. And so we all have children that we are affecting. And so this is for every single one of us. And so we're going to be talking today about how we relate to the people that God has placed in our life. 2 days ago, it was just an amazing moment. I was doing my errands, and I was in a store and began chatting with this lady in the store, and I didn't know her, and she didn't know me, and we're just talking. And she, through the course of the conversation, she said, "I'm a teacher in Broward County schools." And I said, "Oh, wow, well, I used to be a teacher, too. I used to teach first grade years ago." I won't tell you how many years, but a couple. And I said, "Yeah," and she goes, "Really?" And so we started chatting, and she said, "You know something? What is such a heartbreak is with all that that is going on in the public school today in Broward County," she said, "you would not believe the number of teachers that are leaving the teaching profession by the droves," she said. And she said, "You know, I really get that." She said, "I'm supposed to retire in 2 years." And she said, "I cannot wait. I'm counting down the moments." And so we were talking about that. It turned out that she was a Jewish believer. And I just this whole, and here I have been thinking and, you know, talking, thinking in my mind and preparing for this Bible study and for her to be there and talk to me about that. I was like, "Okay, Lord, wow, you are amazing how you think about all the molecules of our lives." And so it was just an amazing conversation, but she helped me to think about, again, what we are dealing with. And again, as we talked about when we talked about the marriage passage last week, what does this have to do with some of us who perhaps don't have children at all, or, you know, have grown children, or maybe there's no interaction with grandchildren because they live too far away, or whatever it is? What does this have to do? Why are we as women studying this passage of Scripture? And there's several reasons. We talked about it last week some, but first of all, it's important as women, Christian women who are following Jesus Christ, to study every page of the Word of God so that we know His heart in all of life's issues. We need to know what God thinks about these things. These are very practical. What does marriage look like as far as God's concerned? What does rearing children look like as far as God's concerned? What does the workplace look like as far as God's concerned? And on, we need to know God's heart. So that's the first reason. All of us have contact, as I already said, with some children through family, through neighbors, through church, whatever it is. And number three, our society today, children are desperate for adults to understand their needs. And that became very evident through that conversation with that teacher. She said, "You just cannot believe the things that are being taught, are being considered, are being causing children to have to think through today? She said, it's just unbelievable. And then I asked permission from one of our group leaders from Tuesday night. I said, can I tell the story? And she says, absolutely, tell it. And she told a story a couple weeks ago about how she's a grandma, and her grandchildren are in high school. And she got a phone call from them, and the grandchildren said, oh, we have the most funny thing that's coming up in school next week. And the grandma said, what? And she goes, oh, it's called a gender bender. Uh-huh. And she said, and you know, if you feel like you want to dress up like, if you're a girl and you want to dress up like a boy, go for it. And if you're a boy and want to dress up for a girl, go for it. And she said, my heart was so incensed. She said, I just couldn't, I didn't even know what to do. And then she said, and then the Lord, it was all like the Lord tapped her on the shoulder, and it was like she felt like the Lord was saying, wait, take your time, pray about it. And she said, you know, as I was being encouraged to do that by the Lord, she said, I realized at the end of the week I was going up, they live in the middle of the state, the grandchildren, I was going up to visit them, and I thought, I'm going to wait. I'm going to pray. I'm going to ask the Lord to give me words, and I'm going to just, you know, wait until God's timing is perfect. And so that's exactly what she did. And when she got up there, they had a great visit and everything. And as she was leaving, she said, you know, by the way, I just wanted to run something by you. And so she began talking to them. The children are believers. They are involved in a youth group in their church. But they hadn't put two and two together. And so she began to talk to them, and it was just the most amazing moment. Now, let me hasten to say, wouldn't it be wonderful if every child that we were connected with could go to a Christian school and be taught about Christian principles and, you know, all those kinds of things? Not everybody can do that. Not everybody can homeschool children. But the point is, we, as Christian women that know children, need to be aware of what they are dealing with in their lives today. We need to have an awareness. And that's why this is such an important passage of scripture for us to do. We need to know how to introduce the children in our spheres of influence to the Lord and His principles to help them cope with what is going on around them out there. Four, as we have noticed what's going on, fourth reason why we need to be studying these principles is that because of what's happening in the American families today, we have seen so many cases of an angry culture, and we've heard and read about much violence out there, haven't we? It's a scary time. So this is not to alarm us as parents and grandparents and people that love children. It's not to be alarm us, but it is to be realistically aware of what the 21st child is dealing with. And then how for us to appropriately, according to God's word, respond to those challenges that children are having. We are preparing an army, quote unquote, to go out to take on the next generation. We have a generation coming up that are going to take over our government, our families, our churches. And so we need to be thinking through what that looks like and what our role is in that process as this next generation, this army of generation is growing up into our lives. This passage is a challenge to get into the lives of this army, quote unquote. And it's never too late to be involved in the lives of the children who God has placed in your path. And Sheridan House is a perfect example. We have middle schoolers and high schoolers now who have been so troubled and in such a mess that they had to be taken out of their homes and come to Sheridan House and have intensive training and discipline and preparing them for the world out there. And here's the most amazing thing. After they've been here for a few months, sometimes it's a year, sometimes it's even a little bit longer, sometimes it's way less, they are able to turn it around. And you think, oh, wow, you know, middle school or what a high school, what in the world could you do? At that point, whoa, forget it. Absolutely not. If that were true, then Sheridan House would not be a God's success story, would it? The other one, and I've told you this 1,000 times, but Bob was a college student. When he turned his life around, became a committed Christian and a serious student. I don't want to tell you what his GPA, I won't even tell you what it was. But as a college student, as a 19-year-old, it was not too late for him to turn his life around. And the thing that is amazing is that we don't, let's not expend energy and, oof, I wish I had, you know what, oh, my kids are way at college, or, oh, my goodness, they're already adults and having their own children. Oh, my goodness, I wish I had been better about, guess what? What we need to do is to put all that energy of, oh, I wish, I should have, that didn't work so well, oh, what did I do wrong? Rather than that, where we need to put our energy is prayer. And what can I do now? How can I influence them at this stage of life? How can I influence the children that are coming along? How can I, rather than, oh man, I just wish that I had thought of it. Prayer is our answer. And again, I've told this story before, but Bob's grandmother in Colorado, Bob was in Tennessee in college, and she had been praying for him since he was a little boy. She had not seen him since, I had this really cute little picture of him riding a horse in Colorado, and he's got a little cowboy hat, and very cute. Anyway, but that was the last time that she had seen Bob. And she had prayed for him, probably knowing her, every single day as he was growing up. And she had seen him, but she was praying. And then I've told you the story how when he was in college, he would get a letter from her and say, hey, I'm praying for you, and all that kind of thing. And he'd be like, right, big deal, whatever. And she would send him money periodically. And one time some money came when he was desperately needing book money, money for his books. And it was just life-changing to him to have this woman that he knew was praying for her, this grandma he hadn't seen for years and years and years, but she was praying for him and was sensing his needs enough that she sent money right at the right moment in his life. Later on, as you know the story, he became a Christian, and we got married after college, and we moved to South Florida, and came to work at Sheridan House, and on and on and on it goes. And again, his grandmother had not seen him, but, you know, was praying for him. And one Sunday, he had been invited to Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church, and Dr. Kennedy at the time was interviewing him. He said, I'm really curious, please talk to us a little bit about Sheridan House, what's going on. And so Bob was on the Coral Ridge Hour, or whatever it was called in the day, and being interviewed by Dr. James Kennedy. Well, guess who his grandmother's favorite TV teacher was? Pastor. Dr. James Kennedy. And so she turned it on, as she always did on Sunday morning, and there was this young man that said, Dr. Robert G. Barnes. And she said, that's my grandson. So her prayers had been answered. And she very soon thereafter went home to be with the Lord. But she had that assurance that this little boy on a horse with his little cowboy hat had now come to know the Lord. And wow, he's being interviewed at Coral Ridge, my favorite church on TV. Amazing. 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 All of that to say, as we get into this passage, let's be prayerfully aware of the children that God has placed in our paths to influence and make get a God's perspective on. How do we walk worthy of our calling? How do we, in our gratitude to the Lord for all His true treasures that we've talked about, make a difference in the children in our lives? We begin by looking at what this passage says to children. So number one on your outline, first, the right relationship for children begins addressing children before it addresses parents on how we should affect those children. Look with me. We are in the 6th chapter of Ephesians. Look at 1 through 3 with me. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first command with a promise that it will go well with you and you may live long in this land. Now, there are two reasons why there's this call for honor and obedience. The first one is the natural law. The natural law. These verses fit with the natural law. It makes sense, naturally. I mean, of course you're going to honor somebody that has been living a lot longer than you, who's experienced life. There's going to be wisdom, and there's going to be good advice from somebody who's lived a lot longer than you. So it makes sense. It's a natural law. Virtually all civilized cultures are built on this principle. With respect and obedience, when there is not that, it leads to a degeneration, first of the family and then society itself. So the first right reason to do this is it's the natural order of civilization, to respect someone's parents, to respect the elders. And as you know, I grew up in the Asian culture, and that was one of the things that was so wonderful about the Asian culture is there's such a respect for elders. Right, Chisato? We respect the people that have gone, because they've lived so much longer. So I remember there'd be times I'd be sitting in a room and an older person would walk in the room and everybody was like, oh, wow. And to be able to pick the brain of somebody that was an elder was incredible. I kind of think that that would be a good thing to happen here too, don't you? Anyway, so first thing, natural law, right thing to do. Secondly, the divine law, be on your outline, to give honor and obedience to our parents because it is in accord with natural law. Number one, it is commanded by God. As Christians, for us, say no more. God says it, period. End of story. God says, honor your parents. So we have... we need to be obedient. Just as children are to be obedient to their earthly father, so we are to be obedient to our heavenly father. In fact, Jesus in the 15th chapter of John, verse 10, I'm paraphrasing this, but he said, we show our love to him by being obedient. So it's God's law. It's a natural law. It's a God's law. And number two, there is a promise, look at verse 3 again, that it may go well with you and you may live long in the land. Of course, the general rule of life is that children who honor their parents, life will generally, not always, but go better for them. Why? A, children will be kept from harm's way. Less accidents and situations that can harm them. Children who listen generally find themselves in less dangerous places. Think of your own life. Do you sometimes wonder how you survived, for goodness sake, when some of the decisions that you perhaps made? Wouldn't some of the fixes that we had found ourselves in growing up have been avoided had we listened to our parents' admonitions, admonishments? Don't do that. Think about this. If we had listened to those a little bit more, perhaps we would have not messed up so much in our lives. Which brings us to another reason children are who obey live. B, they are spared bad habits. A child who is obedient will be spared bad habits and bad friends who tend to create difficulties. The many challenges in life we could avoid if we had been obedient children. C, children will develop character. They will develop character because such a child will be far more likely to develop the healthy character traits. When a disobedient child is far less likely to develop a harmful pattern, a disobedient child will be far more likely to develop a pattern that is not healthy for them. Listen to these verses from Proverbs, the book of wisdom. Proverbs 4:10. Listen, my son, accept what I have to say, and years of your life will be many. Proverbs 10:27. The fear of the Lord adds length to life, but the years of the wicked are cut short. That's pretty black and white, isn't it? Wow. What is required of children to obey, quote unquote. See, how do we do that? First of all, in the Lord. Obey your parents in the Lord. And then the verse goes on to talk a little bit more about it. A, or number one, through listening. The word obey in the original language that this passage is written in the Greek, it literally means listen under. When it says obey your parents, it says listen under your parents' leadership, in other words. Obedience involves conscious listening. If I'm going to obey my parents, I'm going to have to be listening to what they're saying. As a child, I need to hear what my parents' instructions are. How many times have you ever said this to your children or grandchildren? Are you listening to me? You said that before? Yeah, that's the idea here. Listen, 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 and you're going to get good instruction. The Lord implies that children are to obey those who are consistent with Jesus and his word. Much of this has to do, number two, with right attitude. Right attitude. One of my children, she is what Bob liked to call as the barbarian. And she was very strong, and it's been a wonderful trait in her. I shouldn't be telling all this. Don't tell her. Oh, she's going to hear this anyway. But anyway. And she would have that perspective where we'd say, okay, Tori, until you can get this thing together, you need to go sit in the corner for a little bit and do an attitude check. And she would, I don't know if she literally said this, but the attitude was, I might be sitting on the outside, but I'm standing in the inside. Does that sound like her or what? Okay. Don't tell her I told you that. But anyway, through the right attitude, obedience comes from a heart with the attitude of love, of respect, and a desire to show honor and consideration for their parents, which brings us to adult parents. As adult parents, we outgrow the call once we become adults to be obedient, but we never outgrow the responsibility to honor our parents if they're still alive and in our lives. Notice the progression. First, obey your parents. That's instruction to children growing up in a home. Then the next one is, what does it say next? Honor your parents. There's a difference there. Honor your father and mother. We no longer obey. The hierarchy has been established about that in the chapter 5. But even as we trade places and need to become parents to our parents, in a sense, we should do it with respect and honor. Honor your mother and father. You may have to take care of them. You may have to be, you know, getting them to doctor's visits and all those things, but with respect, with respect. I'm looking at you, Boots. That's wonderful. Even as we trade places, to do it with respect and honor, such an area of our lives as our parents are growing and living longer and longer. What a blessing to us. But then we need to be considering a little bit more, don't we? What it means to honor and respect our mother and father. Are we neglectful? Are we respectful? Are we ignoring? Are we patronizing? How careful we need to be with our parents that we're honoring them in a way that would honor God. The interesting thought is that obedience and honor is not possible without training. Possible without training. Children are not born with a propensity and desire to obey anybody. Did you ever notice that? Do you remember the very first temper tantrum your child, and you're like, wait a minute, I thought I had a sweet child here. And every one of children growing up, including, guess what, you and me, as we were growing up, we needed to be trained to obey our parents. It was a training session. I'll never forget, a while ago I was in the store, and there was a mom and a little girl. She must have been like, oh, 4, 5, 6, something like that. And they were in line waiting for the cashier to ring them up. And as she was going by, she was going through this candy section. And she'd say, Mom, can I have those M&Ms? And her mother said, no, honey. As soon as we get home, we're going to have lunch. And that will spoil her lunch. Okay. Went a little bit further. Hey, Mommy, can I have this Milky Way? Honey, I just told you we're about to go home and have lunch, and this will spoil your appetite. And so a little while longer, Mommy, look at this. This is a Snickers bar. Can I have this? Honey, we're about to go home and have lunch. And no, that would spoil your appetite. This must have gone on, I don't even know how many times. I'm sitting here going, And as they got to the cashier, for the last time, she said, Wow, look at this Heath bar. Can I have this? And her mom said, Oh, honey, okay.
Oh, big mistake.
And I thought, oh my goodness, incredible. She caved. She caved. Oh my goodness. Now let me ask you something. Whose fault was it if the little girl grew, never saw her again, but if she grew up to be very disobedient and very, you know, self-centered, controlling brat, whose fault?
Mommy.
Mom! Mom! She was not training. She was not training. And so that's so important, and that is why we need to be looking clearly and deeply and meditatively and purposefully in what God then now says to parents. How do we train? How do we bring up? How do we teach obedience? How do we train these things in a child? Because that mom probably had a nightmare by the time the child was 15, right? And so we need to be very cognizant and aware of what God is instructing us. These next verses, the next verse is to parents. It is parents' responsibility to train obedience, the right relationship for parents. There's a sweet little poem that I read a while ago. It says, A careful man I ought to be. A little fellow follows me. I dare not go astray for fear he'll go the self-same way. I cannot escape his eyes. Whatever he sees in me do, he tries. Like me, he says he's going to be, this little chap who follows me. He thinks that I am good and fine, believes in every word of mine. The base in me, he must not see, that little fellow who follows me. I must remember as I go. Through summer sun and winter snow, I am building for the years to be this little chap who follows me. Isn't that sweet? We should have had to be a mommy too, but point is that we are the ones as parents, grandparents, aunts and uncles, people that have no children in neighborhoods and so forth. We have a responsibility to help in the process of teaching children how to be obedient. Look at verse 4. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Do not provoke or anger your children. Notice that there are two parts, negative and a positive. Number one, A, how do we provoke? How do we provoke or anger our children? Number one, first is fault finding, constantly finding that area that your child has failed. A performance-based home, when a child feels loved and appreciated when they do the right thing, that is not going to train a child in the way he should go, when there's fault finding or anger. Number two, another way is neglect. When parents are too busy, wow, 21st century Americans, too busy with their own agenda to be involved in the lives of their children. Parents in this culture wouldn't dream of allowing their child to go out on the sidewalk on their bicycle without a helmet, right? Without that protection. And yet so often, parents are so overwhelmed with their own lives and what's going on and issues that too many children are going out into the world unprotected, without helmets on, into the world out there. Being exposed, their emotions and spirits being exposed and unprotected. Parents are busily subcontracting out the training of their children to professionals, to the coaches, to the teachers, to the youth pastors, and all those kinds of things, and we need desperately to be involved. I'll never forget when Tori was working here at Sheridan House and the girls part of the Sheridan House, she was, one of the moms asked her if she would meet with her daughter. She said, oh, she's just completely and totally out of control. And so Tori met with her, and she said, after I talked to this young woman for 30 minutes, it became evident that she was screaming for mom's attention. The mom was a marathon runner, and she was obsessed with it, and that was on her mind all the time, all the time, all the time. And the daughter did not feel loved and cared for. And so she was acting out, acting out, acting out, hoping to get mom's attention. Wow, amazing. Perhaps the most provoking is, thirdly, inconsistency. We've talked about fault finding, how careful we need to be, neglect we need to be careful of, and then thirdly, inconsistency. When parents have no plan for discipline and training, there will be a problem because children are wired for boundaries. Children are wired for instructions. When there is no consistent rules and consequences, it makes children feel insecure and exasperated. They become actually angry. I'll never forget when I was teaching elementary school, and I had this first grader, and she was constantly acting up. And I was took her aside one day. I said, "What in the world? What is going on, honey?" And she said, "Well, my mom doesn't love me." And I said, "What do you mean?" And she goes, "Well, I know she doesn't love me because she lets me do whatever I want to do." Wow. And I thought, a six-year-old who gets that? Wow, amazing. And so she was acting out. She was just felt like, I can do whatever I want because mom doesn't really, that's a great face, I'm telling you, perfect. But when there's no plan for training, the result is an insecure child. This passage continues how we're to have a plan, the positive part. We've done the negatives, what we don't want to do, and now the positive part. B, what is the balance of nurture and admonition? Verse 4, I love it in the King James Version. Bring them up in nurture and admonition of the Lord. What does that mean? There's a balance of nurture and admonition. Balance of nurture, that's love. And admonition, that is structure. There needs to be a balance. You've seen that. There are some families that have tremendous amount of nurture. Oh, those kids are so loved. They just are all over the place, love and relationship, and yet there's no structure. And guess what? The children are impossible to be with. Have you ever been around children like that? I'll never forget one of my pastors years ago said, discipline your children so others can love them. Is that profound? Wow. Give them boundaries so other people can love them. Wow. Or how about this one, the other side of the coin? A family where there's tremendous structure and admonition and discipline, but children are little robots. They're kind of like, okay, is it okay for me to do this, mommy? Is it okay for me to sit down here? And they're just like little robots. It's just the opposite side of the coin. There needs to be a balance. Needs to be nurture and admonition, love and structure for a child to be balanced. Needs to be a plan in place to train a child for adulthood. There needs to be a plan that will allow children to grow in a loving, nurturing environment. Number one, what is nurture? Already kind of talked about it, but nurture is relationship or gentleness. Nurture literally means, the original language, feeds and cares. Feeds and cares. That's what nurture means. Tenderness and care. I'll never forget a friend of mine who told me that her father, when she turned 5 years old on her birthday, said, I want to tell you something, honey. You are now five, and so there'll be no more hugs and kisses anymore. You're now grown up. Imagine 5 years old. Amazing. I still remember that she told me that. I was just blown away. Part of the nurture is the second half of the equation, admonition or structure or training. Two, what is admonition? First, we've already established what is nurture, gentleness, relationship, feeds and cares. Admonition, what is it? A, discipline. B, instruction, a plan. there's a great plan out there that I heard from somebody I know and have a lot of respect for, Bob Barnes. And it's called the ICE plan. ICE plan. Instruction, consequence, and exercise. Instruction, consequence, and exercise. Really, instruction comes first. This is what you need to do. And then there are consequences if you don't follow through on the instruction, and then you need to exercise this. Let me give you an example. One of my children, I will not say which, had trouble remembering to bring their spelling book home. And so Bob would say, and then there would be a spelling test, and boom, you know, they get, or 10 or something like that, or whatever. And so Dad instructed and said, here's your instruction. Every Friday or Thursday, you need to bring home your spelling book, because then we're going to go over your spelling words and so forth before you have your spelling test on Friday morning. If you do not do that, you will be writing your spelling words 10 times each. He took the spelling book to Sheridan House, printed it out, so he had every single spelling word in the entire book already printed. So next Thursday, Mom and I are not going to remind you. You've had your instruction. You now need to exercise it. And remember, there's a consequence, C, if you don't do it. And so after one time, this child forgetting to bring their spelling book home yet again, he had to write his spelling words 10 times. I said it. Hopefully not everybody heard it. Anyway, this child, after writing their spelling words 10 times, I'm blushing. After having to do that a couple times, guess what? That child never forgot their spelling book again. Instruction, consequence, exercise. Wow. We have to have a plan in place. It teaches them to be responsible. Then, here's the thing, then you can have fun. Wow, you remembered your spelling book. So let's do some crazy games with the spelling words this week. Have fun. We can loosen up when the structure is in place and the ICE plan has been successful. Then the nurture and the fun and the love and the encouragement and all that craziness can come out. Balance, balance, balance. Children are wired to need both. Children are wired to need both. God has wired them that way. We know that from our own lives, don't we? Wired that way. Summarizing the treasure we possess, notice that the verse ends of the Lord in verse 4, training and so forth of the Lord. This is God's training plan. This is the Lord's training plan. We've been given that, of the Lord. But I also think it means discipline and training about the Lord, of the Lord. In other words, not only do we put a plan in place, not only do we nurture and admonish our children and give them boundaries and so forth, but also we have a responsibility to train about the Lord. One of the most famous passages in the Old Testament is called the Shema, and it is Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 7. And here's what it says. Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 7. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. With these words which I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently, here it is, to your children. And shall talk with them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise. Do you notice that there's not one position that is forgotten? Standing, sitting, walking, lying, getting up, whatever. Every position in your life, you need to be training, you need to be teaching, you need to be telling them about the Lord your God, the Lord is one. Training them. Ultimately, that is our greatest training and instruction responsibility, for us to be training our children in the way they should go. Let's impact the generation of children in the most important way they can be impacted. Teach them about the Lord your God. Again, there's an army preparing to take over. This generation of children are growing up, and they're going to be taking over the future. And so we need to be doing our part to train them well, so that when they begin to take over, when they become adults, when they have their own families, when they are the pastors of the churches, when they are the teachers in the schools, all of those things, we need to have trained them so that this army, quote unquote, will be prepared to do their part. A couple years ago, I was my grandchildren were visiting, and one of my grandsons said, I was getting ready to go for a walk. Exercise walk. And he said, could I come with you? And I said, absolutely, that'd be wonderful. It'd be, make the, you know, the walk go faster, be more fun. And he said, great. So we started out and we're looking at nature and enjoying the creatures and the trees and all that kind of thing. And then he said, you know what, Mimi, I want to tell you about something that's going on in my school. And he began to share about a difficulty that he'd had and some heart-wrenching things that had gone on. And I remember it was almost like the Lord took me by the shoulders and shook me. And it was like he was saying, this is your job. This is your responsibility. Every time you're with your grandchildren, you need to be pouring into them about me. You need to make sure that every time they come over to spend the night, have a sleepover, or, you know, or they're coming over just for the day, or, you know, you're going to take them for ice cream after school, feed into them. Speak to them. Teach them. Train them. Have them know about me. That is all of our responsibility for the children in our lives. Be they children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, people in your church, people in the neighborhood, whatever it is, our responsibility is to speak into the lives of our children about Almighty God. Wow, that is our call.
For previous lessons or other resources, please visit SheridanHouse.org or call us at 954-583-1552. We hope you can join us again next week.